It's a really hard time to be a kid. Our kids are facing so much right now, both in terms of what they experience personally, what those around them are going through, and all with which they are bombarded in the world. On today's episode of Parenting the Mental Health Generation, we will hear about trauma-informed education, a different and important way of thinking about how to support our students. Welcome. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Amy. And we're the hosts of Parenting the Mental Health Generation. It's difficult to know the right things to say and do to support our kids. And sometimes we make mistakes despite our best intentions. Here, we lay it all out together and discuss the topics that concern us on our parenting journey.
Today, we're speaking with Jennifer Janopoulos, the Director of Recovery for District 113, which represents Highland Park and Deerfield High Schools here on the North Shore of Chicago. Jen has been a part of the D113 staff for over 22 years, serving most recently as the Highland Park High School Counseling Department co-chair.
She's here to share with us all about what trauma-informed education means, how she's helping to serve her students, and new ways to think about meeting children's emotional needs in the school setting.
So put in your earbuds, take this 30 minutes for you, and join our conversation with Jen G.
Welcome, Jen. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you both so much. I'm excited to be here.
I was lucky enough to meet you last fall, shortly after you were hired to be the Director of Recovery for High School District 113. And this was a new position they created to support the community following the shooting on July 4th in Highland Park, which is part of your district. So before we dive into the details about that job and trauma-informed education, would you just tell us a bit about you and your career prior to this position and how you landed there last summer?
Absolutely. Like Lisa referenced, I've been in the district for a long time. I always say that I've professionally grown up in District 113. Prior to being here, I'm from Michigan. So I grew up there, went to Michigan State University, studied elementary education with a minor in Spanish and theater. And then I moved to
I'm a Wolverine, so be careful. I'm
Oh, okay, I'm out. How do we end this podcast? No, lots of love for anything Michigan. So I moved here with my best friend. We just wanted something fun and different. And I ended up getting my master's degree at DePaul University in counseling. And many years ago, applied to Highland Park High School. I actually started out as a bilingual counselor. So many of the families that I worked with spoke Spanish. I absolutely loved being a counselor for, 19 plus years. And then became one of the co-department chairs of counseling and was able to lead along with my co-department chair, Lisa Gilbert, our unbelievable, amazing counseling department at Highland Park High School. Then July 4th tragedy happened. And our district moved very quickly to make sure that we were going to support our students, our community, our staff. And obviously, this was new to many of us. And so they were exploring what we were to do and created this position as Director of Recovery. I interviewed for this position, and ultimately, this is the role that I'm serving in for this year. And really, it's to help support systems in the school that ultimately will support our students as it relates to trauma-informed practices. We've also kind of shifted to a term, healing-centered practices, to look in terms of healing as opposed to a deficit model. So that's kind of a new term that I've also learned. I do want to say that I am not a trauma expert. I think it's really important for me to put that out there. I've been learning so much this year. I've been taking so many classes and been fortunate to be doing a lot of professional development as well. But I don't claim to be a trauma expert. I'm definitely a learner right now, and hoping to take all of the information I'm learning and create systems in the schools that will help our students.
The school is very lucky to have you. And I would love to hear more about what this means functionally. What are some healing-centered practices that you've been able to implement in the schools? And how does this impact the students?
When I started this position, it was really important for me to address all students. So I'm going to say tier one. So we use that term in schools, and you might be familiar with it, but just to kind of define it for everybody, tier one means all students. So to look at how can we help every single student, because we know it's just best practice for every student. So how can we address things at the tier one level And then at the tier three level. And so I skipped to tier three because that is really individual support for students that need our support that maybe have experienced some extreme trauma, maybe from the 4th of July, but we weren't going to tease that out. We were going to say we were going to help students with any trauma. We also know that almost one in four students comes to us with having experienced some trauma. So again, when I say this is best practice, this is reactive because of the 4th of July. But truly, these are practices that all schools should be implementing within their systems.
Can I stop you for just 1 second, Jen? Before you go any further, will you just define or give some examples for our audience of what trauma might be? Because you say it can be any kind of trauma, but let's just identify a couple of those.
Absolutely. Trauma will dysregulate your coping system. That's how you would define trauma. It can range, obviously, and people can experience things differently. So you and I could be at the exact same event and your body could experience it differently because of your past, because of your experiences growing up. So things like divorce could be considered a trauma. But again, not everybody is going to experience it the same way. There are larger traumas like abuse, the 4th of July. So really they range. There's little T and big T, and that's defined in terms of consistency and the event. So when 4th of July came, there could be two people that were at the parade. And they will have experienced this differently. Obviously, it was the tragedy on epic proportions. What we're seeing coming into the school would be two students that one student might need more support at that tier level, and one student might be okay day to day, but we know that we want to address this on a mass level to all students at the tier one level. So that student that might not have experienced it the same way will still be receiving supports, and they might not even know it through like SEL, social emotional learning, at that base level for all students, whereas a student that we're seeing have more trauma, we're going to address in different ways.
Especially given that trauma can be and is defined in so many different ways. Get back to this idea of, so how do we put things into place then at different levels to support those students?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we're looking to do really at the tier one level, so again, addressing all students, is to see how we can create an SEL, a social emotional learning program, for all students. And that could be delivered through home. We're still in the process of this, how we can make sure that we're supporting students at every level with self-awareness and really understanding their own well-being. We have a system called Panorama at both high schools. And this is an amazing data system that we use to deliver surveys to the students 3 times a year, which is the recommended amount. And it's a social emotional screener. And it really asks pointed questions about students. Can they identify ways to cope? I mean, there's a variety of different questions. And we use that information to help inform our practices. So we use it, again, to inform about the curriculum that we're going to develop to address social emotional learning. And then we look at it to see who is reporting that they need more supports through that tier one level. And so that's where we've created the tier one interventionists at the high school. And those are 2 licensed certified staff members, Genevieve Misfeld at Highland Park and Robin Korlitz. And they, under this director of recovery position, they're working in both schools, respectively, to implement systems that are going to help all students, the tier one. Then we looked at trauma interventionist or healing-centered interventionist at both schools, and those would help students with more severe trauma that needed more one-on-one supports. And that's Melissa Zantara at Highland Park High School and Josh Novick at Deerfield High School. And so the idea really, Lisa, was to just look at all students and to see what level of support is needed. All students to get some sort of a delivery of an SEL program through tier one, and then the tier three level addressing independent needs for students that are experiencing more trauma.
And these systems are meant to stay in place after the director of recovery's job is done, which is at the end of this year, correct?
Absolutely.
These systems stay.
Yes. I will tell you this. My position was created with sort of not a timeline attached to it. And I think that after this year, it makes sense for this position to sort of dissolve and for the systems that are currently in place that I just mentioned to stay in. Within each school, we have something called a multi-tiered system of supports. And so both of these programs fall under that system. And there's this own level of like accountability within the buildings that makes the most sense. And I have to say that I am so excited that these programs are staying for our students in the building, because what we've seen in this year, Amy, and the supports that students have received is pretty unbelievable. So it excites me that I'll be back in the building as department chair of counseling and I can still see and work with our recovery team.
Are there parts of what have been implemented already that feel particularly helpful to you that you've noticed? Like, wow, this was a real success. I wish all schools around here were doing these new things that we've discovered.
For sure. I think that the professional development that we've been trying to provide for all of our staff has been amazing. And that's really just around these healing-centered practices, which, like I said before, is really best practices. And I also want to say so many teachers already do this. A lot of this is just a mindset shift. And so, you know, I think this idea of how we're creating the spaces in our building, we're being very explicit about it. Even though intuitively, there are a lot of teachers that do this, because that's why we've gone into this field, to create safe spaces for students. Now it's explicit. And there are skills, there are tools, there are strategies to doing this. And we are pushing those out through professional development, which is, you know, incredibly important. So again, like, doing something intuitively is one thing, but then having the actual strategies behind that is important. So things like just creating these welcoming environments. This fascinating book I read in one of the classes that I'm taking called What Happened to You? And so it's this idea, instead of like, what's wrong with you? You know, it's what happened to you, like something happened. And in this book, they say that connectedness is the antidote to addiction or to trauma. And so this idea of creating spaces where students feel belonging and connectedness. How do you do this? Little things sometimes, greeting a student by name, having student voice and agency within the classroom, having students build classroom charters, having them have a level of being a stakeholder in the classroom, feeling connected to the teacher. I mean, those are things that are so important in creating this sense of belonging. Amy, were you going to ask me something?
Yeah, I have so many questions, but just in response to that particular piece, it sounds like what you're also describing is giving the kids agency and control back, not just connection, but a sense of, this is my classroom, this is my path. Is that right?
Yes. And here's the thing that I also always find so interesting. I hear sometimes, well, what about the academics? What about the content? You know, students have, you know.
Sometimes you hear this.
Okay, I wanted to be often. Nice.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. You can lay it all out on the line here.
Many times, you know, there's a worry about content, you know, I want my child to take this trajectory academically. Here's the beauty of all of this is there's a direct correlation between students' well-being, their social emotional health, and how they will perform. If somebody out there is listening and they're still focusing on academics and content, I'm not judging at all. So I want to be very clear on that. But I am here to tell you that there's a correlation to a child feeling good when they are in school, feeling connected, feeling belonging, feeling like they have agency and voice in the classroom. There's a direct correlation between that and how they will perform academically and how they will attend school. It is all connected. So it doesn't have to be one or the other. That's the beauty of this. It is both of these things.
Mic drop.
True.
Can I ask you a question about that, though? Because I mean, in theory, I don't think there's anything I could agree with more. In practice, I think where it sometimes gets tricky is finding that nuance and that balance between supporting a student's mental health and also making sure that there are expectations.
Absolutely.
One thing professionally that I've come across a lot recently in a lot of different high school districts around here is this idea that the push towards mental health, which I am a large fan of, has at times resulted in a complete release of expectations around things like, for example, homework completion. Mm-hmm. And so students are getting good grades in classes, even if they're not turning in any homework anymore. And the school staff are responding with, we don't want them to be stressed out about this. If they can show mastery of material on a test, it's really just not the priority. And I think where the parent concern then comes in is, but are we preparing our children for success outside of the high school building when there are going to be deadlines and there are going to be expectations? And I'm wondering if you can speak to striking that balance a little bit.
This does not take away from boundaries or from expectations. It's the warm demander, as Zaretta Hammond talks about in culturally responsive teaching. It is the ability to create these spaces, but also hold expectations and boundaries and students accountable for certain things. So Lisa, I know you because I have taken the time to get to know you and see you and see the layers of you. And so when you're coming in and you don't have the homework for me, is a conversation, is understanding why you don't have homework. It's taking those minutes. And this is not taking a full classroom. It's really understanding the layers to why you might not have that in. It's flexibility as opposed to just a diminishing of any expectations. It's a flexibility with tests or flexibility with deadlines, flexibility with homework. It's not none at all. And again, like all of the research points to, with all of this, you will see an increase in academic, an increase in test scores. So to somebody who might worry that with this is going to come a decline in these, is not what we're seeing at all, research-based statistically. And it also takes time to build these relationships. You know, it takes time to create this space in the classroom. And I understand that. I also want to say, I haven't been in the classroom. I taught middle school years ago. So I think it's so important to remember that being in a classroom all day, like teachers, it's tough. And I just want to give that shout out. If there are teachers listening or even for parents to understand, there are so many demands for our staff. I just want to acknowledge that as well.
It's going to be the question I had, and that is that I did spend a number of years in an elementary classroom here as an assistant teacher, and I still am in close touch with a lot of my teaching colleagues.
Yeah.
And you know, almost across the board, if not completely across the board, everyone is reporting complete exhaustion, frustration. Kids are really struggling. And so behaviors are tough. Yep. Classroom management has become, you know, top of mind for everyone. How did the staff in your district, how was it received, this sort of change of mindset, as you called it? And how is it received now, you know, 10 months later? Can you speak to that a bit?
Of course. I think it's still being received. It's still so new. And I want to say again, these are things that staff has been doing forever, but we're naming it. We're just more intentional. The position, so Genevieve at Highland Park and Robin at Deerfield, were created as almost an instructional coach model. So the idea is to help teachers and to lessen that load, so to speak, and be able to come in and work with teachers on some strategies to help all of the things that you just talked about, Amy. They've actually taken residencies. They've done collaborations with departments. They have office hours. They have done lunch and learn professional development to really address this and to look at how they can be most helpful to staff. So a staff member could either come to them and say, I am frustrated. Nobody's listening. Kids are dysregulated. I need help. That's the idea behind those positions, is really to take some of that mental burden off of teachers and to assist them in that way. Here's what else I'll say. Any social emotional learning program, so we say an SEL program, you may have heard this term. It's used frequently now. It stands for social emotional learning. What I have learned this year is that many programs, ones that I am most fond of, address the adults in the building first. Because if you have a dysregulated adult, it is very hard to co-regulate your classroom. I'm going to tell you a very interesting story that I heard from Dr. Mark Brackett, who is this social emotional like rock star. He is out of the Yale Institute for Emotional Intelligence, and he teaches a class on emotional intelligence amongst doing many other things. So he has a large sampling of teachers that he uses for surveys and data and statistics. And he did an experiment or a, I don't know what the word I'm looking
for. A study.
Okay, if we can add that in. Edit. He did a study. So Mark Brackett did a study, and he, I don't remember the exact numbers, but let's say he had 10 teachers and he put 5 of them in a negative headspace. How did he do that? Well, he had them journal about a bad experience in their life. Then he took the other 5, and again, giving some liberties with numbers. He took the other 5 and he put them in a positive headspace. So he had them journal about something positive. Then he had them all grade the same paper. And so where do you think the grades lie?
I'm going to venture a guess here and say that those in a negative headspace were harsher graders than those in a positive.
1 to 2 grades lower, Lisa.
Wow. Wow.
And so I'm sharing this all to say the importance of our staff's well-being. My daughters, they sense the energy. It's called emotional contagion. They know when they go into a classroom and their teacher's having a bad day. They know that. It's okay for a teacher to also say, to name it, today I'm a little frustrated. I'm going to work through it, modeling it. And so to help teachers do that and to help teachers have their own level of self-awareness about their emotions and to address that, to address the climate and culture and all of that are really in any SEL, social emotional learning program, it's typically adults first for the first year. How do we address it with the adults?
And how do you address it with the adults? Do you have any examples of how you're supporting the teachers and staff in the buildings to then support our children?
Absolutely.
Are very, very effective, I feel.
Oh, say that again, Amy.
Donuts.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, right now, what we're trying to do is listen. And so listening to the staff, kind of similar things that we want for students, creating spaces where staff feels connected, where staff feels a sense of belonging, where staff feels heard and seen. And so one example, Lisa, is at Highland Park, they are doing listening sessions where they're sitting down and hearing what staff has to say. And it could be absolutely anything. And so that is step one, is really gathering. There's also been, you know, surveys that have been sent out. Actually, Mark Brackett and Karen Nini out of Castle developed a survey for staff asking them questions. How are you feeling? Open-ended questions. And then step two, which I think we're going to, we're not there yet, is what do we do with that information? Because nobody wants to take a survey or ask how you're doing and then never have anything done with that. So the importance of now getting this information, which is what's happening right now, and then moving forward with that.
I actually did want to revisit what you had said earlier about the student surveys. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you're in phase two of that part of what do you do with all of this incredible data that it sounds like you're collecting about students' mental health through these surveys multiple times per year?
It informs our eligibility for students if they need additional support, but it's also informing the delivery of SEL or social emotional learning at a tier one, so all student levels, so maybe through homeroom. So to look at where are the areas of need, and then how can we create a system, support, a lesson, whatever it is, around what that need is. It also, to me, like, is informing practice. And so just another quick story, this is just incredibly important with connectedness. So Mark Brackett, who I referenced earlier, did a study about people having somebody in their life. He's very open. He shares experiences about his own level of trauma. He shares it in his book, and he shared it with our professional development. And he talks about the importance of having an adult for students, for children to have an adult in their life. And so he, in his study, it came up that 34% of adults share that in their, when they were children, they had an adult in their life that they felt safe with, that they felt was unconditional and non-judgmental, only 34%.
Actually, including their parents?
I'm so glad you asked that, Amy. Out of that 34%, only 5% identified that adult as their parent.
Wow.
And so I share all of this to say, through our Panorama survey, we ask that question, do you have a supported adult in the building that you can go to? And so because based on those results, homeroom, I will argue, was born out of some of those results to put adults in children's life that will hopefully connect with them in a way that is unconditional, non-judgmental, a safe place for students.
I'm a big believer, as I'm sure we all are, that the school is the heart of the community.
Mm-hmm.
The high school in particular, where every child or every public school child in the community attends. How is or did your district communicate to the families and parents in your community about the Panorama scores? Because I know our community is doing the same survey.
Yeah.
And about the importance of what you open this podcast with, which is a child whose mental health is not in a good place, is unable to attend academically the way they would if they felt safe, heard, et cetera.
Yeah.
How are you doing that? And how are you bringing the community in for buy-in? Because that's, I think, a really important conversation for our audience to.
I completely agree. It's a challenge. We brought Mark Brackett and Karen for an evening program specifically to address every single question that you just asked. to share all of what they've been sharing with us. And I think we had 60 parents show up. Mm-hmm. And so what I say is that's data for me. I don't want to come at it with like, can't believe only 60 parents. I want to say, okay, that's data. So what do we need to do then to get more parents? Like, these are two unbelievable experts. We had Scott Poland come and speak to parents right after the fourth, and he is an expert in trauma. And I think there were maybe 10 people there, myself being one of them. I was at both of these. And I don't have an answer, but I think it's a good question to say, okay, this is happening. We have these amazing experts to deliver this information to our parents, to our community, and we're not getting the turnout that we should get. What do we do with that? What are we doing wrong? Because I think it's important to hold a mirror to ourselves and to see, what do we need to do? And how do we need to work with our community to see the level of importance of these events?
Well, and I think it's important to help our communities understand, and this is one of the things I know Catch works at every single day, understand that what's happening in our world, whether it be the tragic shooting on July 4th, the increase in social media, the absolute, you know, contentiousness of our world at large, all of those things have effects on our kids that we may or may not see. And so these conversations are becoming increasingly important. And I congratulate your district for having them.
Yeah.
And for putting it out there, because pushing us in the right direction.
Well, and there's just so much out there. I'm sorry, Lisa.
No, go ahead.
I just think that there's so much out there to learn. And because of this position, I have grown so much, not only professionally, but personally. As a mom, some of the things that I've learned in this space have profoundly affected and changed me as a parent. And so, like, even for me to go as a parent to Mark Brackett and Karen Eamy, you know, he had this one say, and I put it in the notes in my phone, and I went home and I said this to my seven-year-old. And he said, the power of just saying to a child, you don't have to worry alone. And I was like, that is amazing. And so these little snippets of information for parents to be able to get to help them grow, because gosh, we're all so flawed. Like, we just are, and that's okay. But to take advantage of these things, I think would just help us as a community, help us as parents, as educators. I really want to look to see how can we get this out there. And I've attended Catch events, and I feel like they're so well attended. So I'd be picking your brain about how I can do that.
The brains that you're picking would say, stick to it and work hard. And sooner or later, you know, maybe the flags go up and people come. Yeah. You know, we don't have much time left at all. And I feel like we could invite you back to really learn the ins and outs of what's happening inside the schools. But I think we've done a really good job introducing what trauma-informed education is and why it's important. Is there anything else that you would like to add, Jen, before we sign off on this particular episode?
You know, I think it would be awesome if you ever had time to bring in Melissa Zentara, who is one of our Healing Center instructors, and she actually developed a wellness center at Highland Park. I think you'd be so interested in picking her brain because she can really get into this and talk more specifically about things. Maybe my parting words would be this idea that what we're talking about is not meant to be an add-on. It's meant to be hearing and seeing students and creating spaces for students to be who they are. Because if a student is dysregulated, they can't access the ability, the part of the brain that allows them to learn the content or take the test or turn in the homework on time. You know, they can't access that. So when students feel regulated, when we create these spaces where a student feels like they belong and they are connected, it benefits everybody. It benefits everything, academics, content, attendance, all of it is benefited. So I think that that would be like my main soundbite that I would like to leave with.
And it sounds like even though this particular role is a one-year role that you're in right now, the concept is still in its infancy. And I'm really excited to see where it goes and what you guys do with the information and the seeds that you're currently planting. So thank you.
Yes, Steve, Lisa.
Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. Thank you. It was great.
Stay current on all Catch programming by liking us on Facebook at Catch is Community, or by visiting our website, catchiscommunity.org.
We're glad that you joined us to continue the conversation. It's important to talk about our mental health and reach out for help if needed.